And thank you, Kiris, and thank you, Nikki, for producing the show so well. Thank you, Rob, and whomever else is around there, too. And you know what? I guess it's kind of like whomever else is around is sort of something that we don't like to think about. Or maybe we do. Maybe it brings you great comfort to think that we could be surrounded by ghosts. You know, for others of us, perhaps if we really thought who was looking at us and what we were doing at the time, that would be very disconcerting. It wouldn't bring us peace to know that we were being spied upon. Forget RFID tags. You know, if we really do have spirits all around us, what must they be thinking about what we're doing? Or what aren't we doing if we're thinking about them too much? I don't know. I've never been able to come to terms with ghosts, and I've been on a few ghost expeditions. I believe I have seen a ghost. But how extraordinary an experience is that? And what does science tell us about the afterlife? That was The Pursuit of Mary Roach. The book is called Spook. And when we continue the conversation next, we'll pick up right where we left off with the medium from the TV show Medium, ectoplasm, and the spirit world. What does science have to say about that? Next on Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. Mary Roach wants to believe that there is an afterlife, but just born, she said, without that faith gene. She's got to know, not just consider. And that's what sent her on a search for spook. Science tackles the afterlife. So, Mary Roach, can I assume from that you've never seen a ghost?
Never seen one, but I've heard weird things.
Where did you hear weird things?
I used, for a period of about 6 months, I would be awakened by this very loud knocking on the door, just very clearly, loudly, loud, so much so that I would get up out of bed and stagger to the door, much to the amusement of my husband, Ed, who would be sitting in the living room. You know, there's no one at the door. But it was, and then I thought, holy cow, is this, it's the Grim Reaper coming. I'm not going to answer it. You know, it was right. The weirdest thing. I mean, you know, if you apply Occam's razor, the simplest explanation would be, you know, it was some
hallucination.
I don't know,
a mental
hallucination. Right. But it was so vivid. I mean, it was just, get the door, out the door. Someone's at the door. Oh, my God, it's 2 a.m. And I'd get out of bed. And it was the most bizarre thing.
I worked at a rock radio station in Davenport, Iowa, 97X.
Uh-huh.
And it was built into a former funeral home. The funeral home had moved to another part of town, and it built a new facility and sold this old mansion, which we called the Rock and Roll Mansion. And it sat on top of Brady Street Hill, and it looked like exactly what you expect sort of a haunted house to look like. It was very, you know, sort of brick solid edifice. And inside, where hundreds of funerals had taken place, many of us experienced both the sound and the feeling of ghosts. And this was something that particularly bothered the former overnight person at the radio station before the days of automation.
Oh, yeah.
And they would actually never leave the studio. They would go in when somebody else was in the building. They would lock themselves in the studio. They'd do the whole overnight show, and they wouldn't come out until the morning show came in. And then they would leave. And that's because the few times that they had ventured into the hallway, they had been surprised by ghostly images. And the person needed the job more than they were willing to admit. So they just, you know, they didn't tell anybody about it first, but they just, that was how they dealt with it. Well, the second I started working there, shortly after college, I began to experience some of the same things. And what we would hear was, and this is intriguing, but the building had an elevator, a body elevator.
Yeah.
And they would use that both to bring the bodies up to the second story where they had the embalming room, the former embalming room of this old funeral home. And they also would use it to bring the caskets up from the basement where they had, you know, all the caskets stored. And spontaneously, when the building was totally empty, the body elevator would just start going up and down.
Wow.
Yeah. And they looked at it. They investigated it. They checked it. You know, nothing. There was nothing wrong with it. And then the other thing is occasionally, and this happened to my partner at the time, who was on the air with me, he would go, he went once to go get coffee in the morning. And as he was walking along the hallway, over his head, the ceiling tile rippled as though it was like somebody walking on the other side of the ceiling tile.
Whoa.
And he came really quick back in the studio.
Wow.
Doing that whole Elmer Fudd blah, 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 thing, you know, just looking like he had seen a ghost.
Well, see that's, you've got the proper, you know, spooky effect going on. I had, when I have these experiences, they're so kind of pedestrian. There's no theremin music. There's nothing sort of a weird effect. I have another one. Should I tell you my other
Please.
Ghost story?
Yeah.
Okay. I came into my kitchen one morning. And this is when I was living with a man who I've long since broken up with. But I came in the morning. It was February. There was a little heart in the center of the kitchen table, one of those little Valentine's Day hearts.
Sure.
And it said, no use. You know, they're printed with things, which is kind of a bummer of a Valentine's Day heart message.
Sure is.
I'm sure they've discontinued that one. But anyway, it's just sitting there. And the bowl of candies was in the other room. So I, you know, said, David, check this out. This is bizarre, isn't it? And he said, yeah, that's weird, huh? And I thought, wow. And the people upstairs, our neighbors upstairs, used to talk about the ghost of Mrs. Bassolino, who had died in the building. And they would say that doors would open and shut and the floors would creak. So I thought, hey, it's Mrs. Bassolino.
Right.
And I thought, well, this is handy because I'm the kind of person who misplaces things a lot. And now I had a scapegoat because Mrs. Bassolino is always messing with my keys.
Exactly.
And So fast forward a couple of years. I'm working on Spook, and I was thinking, oh, maybe I should tell some of my ghost stories. I didn't, but I thought, duh, David put the heart on the table. It was a quiet comment on our relationship, you know,
you're about
which
to crash
break and burn.
Up. Right.
We broke up, and I thought, and I thought, why did I not think of that? And I guess, you know, I was thinking, oh, I must have been in denial. I couldn't entertain that theory. So
right.
I tracked David down. He lives in Germany now, and I said, I wrote him an email. I said, I'm working on this book. And I need to know this. And I don't care. I'm not angry that you did it. Who cares? You know, we're on good, eventually on good terms. I said, I need to know. It was you, right, that put the heart on the table. And he said, nope, absolutely not. It wasn't him that put the heart on the table. So, I have no idea.
But how does a scientific mind like yours, a writer, a skeptic, how do you come to terms with that? And what do you find in the pursuit of the afterlife in your book that leads you to confirm or disconfirm the possibility that it really was Mrs. Bassolino?
Well, I think it's illustrative of how invested we can be in our convictions. I think I needed to believe there was nothing wrong with my relationship, so I couldn't even entertain the more sensible theory, which would have been that David put it there. And I think so I was motivated to believe that there had to be some other explanation. I didn't have any other idea what it could be, so I thought, okay, ghost. And it was the sort of thing that you believe and don't believe.
Right.
You know, if I had to put money down on it, I don't think I would have put it down on the ghost, even though I had no other explanation. But I liked telling people, I think we've got a ghost.
I was in a dorm in Lake Forest College in Lake Forest, Illinois, my first couple years of school, and this is late 70s, and there was a chapel next door to the dorm, and I kept hearing music from the chapel in the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, that's weird. And I talked to other people, said they heard the same thing too. And then you would see the occasional odd light kind of go, like almost like a flashlight, almost like somebody was running through with a flashlight.
Yeah.
And I could just see this right out my dorm window. And I started asking around about it, and people told me that there were stories of the chapel being haunted. So I looked into the story, and actually I got together with a couple other people, and we played Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? And we decided to spend the night in this chapel. And we got permission from the school to do it. Yeah. And then I wrote about it afterward. And what was interesting was the first reported sighting of the ghost came from an older, very skeptical, not given to this sort of fancy security guard who went in to the building where you had to, as a security guard, you know, they carry that thing. It looks like a canteen around them, and they have to have there's a key that's inside it, and they clock in, so it shows where they've been walking.
Yeah.
And the key used to be inside of the chapel, and he went in to just, you know, crank that little clock that let him know that he'd been there. And as he walked in there, there was somebody standing there in the chapel. He turned to speak to them, thinking it was somebody that some kid had let themselves in. And he said the person just faded into the wall. And he was so thrown by that he threatened to quit unless they moved the box with the key in it outside the chapel, and he never had to go back in it again. But reports continued to come in. So, you know, over the years, people kept talking about the music or lights or other things. We spent a night in there, and we went in with a Ouija board.
Mm-hmm.
So we went in with a Ouija board, and we tried to get a feeling for what was going on. And I'm not big on the Ouija board thing, really.
Yeah. That's a tedious way to communicate.
Right. And it's not my worldview, you know, how I was raised, but I thought, let's give it a try. And son of a gun, I mean, things were popping up on that Ouija board that to this day I can't quite explain. And the things that it said led us to believe that it was the spirit of the person who had formerly been the music director of that chapel when the church, when it was a church and the college was still a religious college, and it was no longer a religious institution. It had just become a liberal arts college.
Wow.
And the feeling was that person was haunting the school for no longer being religious.
Some people will hold a grudge very, very long time.
Exactly. So, I mean, I look at that and I think I too am skeptical of that. It doesn't even fit in with my worldview, but I cannot shake that. So what have you found, and what did you get when you went to the medium that's in the TV show Medium? Did you get something as a scientist that you could wrap your hand around?
Well, let me say, though, that before we get to the medium of the medium, I spent some time with Michael Persinger, who's probably been on your show, but who has this electromagnetic haunting system set up.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, it's a soundproof room, and he passes complex electromagnetic fields through your right hemisphere. The theory being that it's possible to artificially induce the sense of being haunted. You know, you would hallucinate the feeling that someone is in the room with you. And he claims that 80% of the people that put on this solenoid bedecked Skidoo helmet that he has feel that. And I, of course, you know, immediately got myself up to his lab and put on the Skidoo helmet and did have, you know, actually a sort of an odd, for me, it's always something I hear. I never see anything. But I did have a sort of an odd experience. But but here's the thing. I said, okay, so you think there's no such thing as ghosts, in other words. And he said, no, that's only one possible explanation, that it's a hallucination. The other possible explanation is that what these EMFs do is slightly retune your brain so that you are now aware of something that was always there, but that you could not sense before.
You know, I was using that conversation as a way into the medium from medium, but I think you're right. Let's go there first, because I want you to tell that story about what that was like. The helmet, it almost sounds like something comical, you know, to put on a helmet.
He took a photograph of me, which could certainly be used for blackmail. It's very embarrassing.
So send that to your old boyfriend. There's a proud moment. So I'm a successful writer. Here's my
I'll do anything for my book.
That's right. So, but talk about that, because I think that's really interesting. And you, again, you come at this not to prove it, but just to look for evidence.
Yeah, I just want to know. I would love to have an answer. I'm not looking to prove or disprove. I would love more than anything else, actually, to see a ghost or to have an experience. I feel like such a loser that I don't have these experiences. There's something wrong with me.
But you say that, but yet how many people have a cool Valentine story or a knock at the door story,
well,
too?
Yeah, but the thing, you know what is odd? That these things happen to me, and there's one other one. It's not all that interesting.
No,
but
don't say that. Don't talk down your ghost story.
But because there's no Hollywood music or, you know, and no slow-mo or everything, you know, there's none of that. It just seems sort of pedestrian, and the hair doesn't stand up on my arms or anything. I just think, well, that's weird. And then get on with my day.
You know, the interesting thing is your hair doesn't, but I bet you people hearing the story about the door knocking or the Valentine heart that just said no use on it, I bet you their hair did. I mean, mine did as you're telling that story. That's freaky weird.
It's freaky weird. Okay, I'll tell you the other one, the third one.
Go ahead.
This one was, I'm walking through the flea market on a Sunday morning and just looking at the cheap socks and things. And I hear the voice of a good friend of mine who has recently died. His name is Eric. But it's just, hey, Mary, in this very, very unmistakable Eric voice. Just, hey, Mary. And I turn around thinking, whoa, Eric's here, you know, sort of having forgotten that he's dead.
Like a reflex, sure.
Yeah, like a reflex. Like turn around thinking, hey, it's Eric Brody. He's here. And there's no one there. And there's not that many people around. There's not a lot of hubbub. And I thought, well, that's, you know, I suppose I misheard, again, Occam's razor. The most likely definition, most likely explanation is that,
sure,
I misheard something someone else said. But it was just so unmistakable. Hey, Mary, he has a very, unmistakable voice.
Right.
So there you go. I don't know. But then I went on and, you know, went further on down the line and, you know, bought a bread box or whatever. It was not like I sat down and was like, oh, Eric's trying to get in touch with, you know, it didn't affect me the way it affects you in the movies. I guess we've become so.
Yeah, but I don't like that yardstick. I don't believe the movie should be, you know, the measure of our reality. And in that sense, I wonder whether, again, like you said earlier, there's something about that voice that maybe retuned us to how the things really are, and they shouldn't be juxtaposed against the way we create our myths on celluloid.
Right.
You know, I mean, we add things into it which heighten the experience, but we shouldn't look at everything. You know, I have a dog. If I measured my experience with my dog against Wallace and Gromit, my dog would be very boring, and I'd get rid of my dog because he doesn't drive. He doesn't
have that comical accent.
Right. He doesn't wear clothes, and so I look at that. By the way, the new Wallace and Gromit movie is excellent.
I can't wait.
Marvelous.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's what. So I think we have to avoid that criteria, and we have to really focus on living in the now and not and just what we're going through. And I don't know whether that was Eric speaking to you, but I know that when an uncle of mine died, he was scheduled to go over just days before he died. He had told an elderly woman in his town that he would go over and he would help her shovel her walk whenever the snow fell. And he died having made that promise that I'll be over with the next snowfall, I'll take care of it, died. And the next day, the woman, not having known that my uncle died, reported seeing, oddly, my uncle standing on the sidewalk in front of her house, waving at her.
Oh.
And then disappeared.
Oh. I love that.
Yeah. So that leads us to, then, let's back to the helmet, the Skidoo helmet, ectoplasm, and the medium from medium. We continue this conversation with Mary Roach approaching the subject of spooks. Science tackles the afterlife in Spook. Next on Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. I think it was the movie Ghostbusters that really put the word ectoplasm into the popular vernacular. And yet Mary Roach went in search of ectoplasm. You almost don't want to know where they found it, but we're going to tell you anyway. There's a story on the coasttocoastam.com website tonight about another culture in pursuit of ghosts. They pop up all the time, and we report them to you as we hear them. In this particular story, and I couldn't get the link to work for me earlier, but it's again, it's another story about villages commonly reporting ghosts and what the ghosts are doing in these remote villages. Well, Mary Roach went in pursuit of ghosts, trying to find them, and it took her to San Francisco and a helmet and then ectoplasm, which took her all the way to Cambridge. And she has seen what can be seen as science tackles the afterlife next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Mary Roach is the author of Stiff, The Curious Lives of Human Cadavers, and the new book Spook, a kind of sequel of sorts, anyway. And we got sidetracked, but I think a good sidetrack, more of a sidebar perhaps in the conversation about this with the helmet. And to start from the beginning on that, because I think where we all are is where you started off, which is wanting to know, wanting to see something. So many of us want to, and not everybody has.
Right. Well, the helmet is, okay, I need to step back for just a second. I guess I should explain that it's very common. Ghost hunting societies often carry EMF meters.
Right.
And it's thought that when your EMF meter goes up, there's a ghost presence. Okay. And I actually called up the makers of this, and I said, they actually advertise it this way. I mean, it's advertised. They sell certain models for, you know, electrical professionals to use, but there is a model they sell for ghost hunting. And I called up and I said, why do you believe that this device can detect ghosts? What is your evidence? And he said, well, you know, I think it's because people would notice when they felt a chill or they felt a presence, there'd be a jump in the EMF meter. And so somebody must have just assumed that that means, you know, that there's a ghost. But Persinger is interesting because he takes the ghost out of the equation and just says, let's look at what EMFs do to people. And he exposes people's brains to these complex electromagnetic fields and get some weird effects. And that's what I was up there doing.
Okay,
that's the background.
So he gives you permission to come and try the helmet.
Yes, that's
okay.
Right.
Explain the title of the helmet.
The title of it?
Yeah, what's it called?
God, it's just the helmet.
It's like the Skidoo. What was
it? Oh, yeah, I called it, it's a solenoid bedecked. That was just my beautiful command of the language.
Okay. Solenoid bedecked Skidoo helmet.
It was a solenoid bedecked Skidoo helmet.
All right.
So, and it's homemade. He's made it. And, I mean, he's a professor. He publishes in legitimate journals. He's not a wingnut.
Okay.
But not a total wingnut, though he does always wear a three-piece suit, apparently, even when he mows his lawn. This is the rumor.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Sorry.
You've just entered into Wingnut. If you're mowing your lawn in a three-piece suit, that's your neighbor.
Yeah.
It's charming, but that gets a little weird.
But
So he's always dressed in a three-piece suit.
Well, this is what my cab driver told me this on the way over. I said, I'm over to see Dr. Persinger. And he said, I went to Laurentian University. Yeah, he's an interesting man. I hear he mows his lawn in a three-piece suit. And I thought, yeah, right. So then I'm sitting waiting for him, and the door opens, and here's the man in the three. Not only is it three pieces, it's pinstripe with a watch fob. He's probably listening.
Well, good. And it's a good look for him.
It is a good look. He's very
good brand. It's good branding, as
it
they
is.
Say. You know? So
he gets to wear the three-piece suit with the watch fob, and I've got to wear the Skidoo helmet with the dorky thing sticking out.
Right.
Yeah.
So, okay.
So he puts you in the, this happens to me. I did a telepathy. I was a telepathy subject once and, up at the late Robert Morris's lab. And, I'm just not a good subject. I'm not, they'll always say, okay, there's a tape recorder rolling. Tell me everything you're seeing, feeling, hearing, And then he'll say, okay, and I'll shut the door. And in both cases, you know, I sat there silently so long that they thought I was asleep. Mary, Mary, are you awake? Because, you know, I read transcripts of other subjects, and they're,
right.
You know, there's lights flashing, and there's, you know, weird feelings, and someone's pulling my leg and bending it up the wall, and all this stuff is going on. And me, I'm just sitting there thinking, got something stuck in my teeth.
Yeah.
How long have I been in here? Okay, try harder, try harder. Clear your mind, clear your mind. So,
do you think it's prejudice somehow that
you? No, you know what he said, because he gave me a whole battery of personality inventories before I went in.
Right.
And he said that I am what you would call a least responder.
Okay, that's a nice way of saying what?
That's a nice way of saying I'm someone who I'm left hemispherically dominant.
Okay.
So I'm the sort of person who's not constitutionally inclined to have these experiences, according to him.
But all the more interesting then that you do on occasion.
I do on occasion.
Okay. So, yeah. All right. So despite that lack of predisposition.
Right. Towards the end of the session, one of the sessions, he did a couple things with me, but I heard, you know, the sound that a police car makes when they want you to pull over, that whoop, whoop, whoop
yep.
thing.
Right.
I heard that, and, you know, I didn't really think that much of it. And when he came in and he was asking me questions, I just said, did you hear that? Did you hear the siren? And he said, Mary, this is a soundproof room. There is no siren. There was no siren in here or outside. But if there was a siren outside, you wouldn't have heard it. So that was a little weird.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
So you've gone down that road, and then you go to see the medium of medium.
Yes. Medium.
You didn't know that she was that famous. She didn't the mark,
no.
but you knew she was good. She came well recommended.
She came well recommended. This is Gary Schwartz's lab, the Human Energy Systems Laboratory at the University of Arizona. And Gary, for the most part, just works with the cream of the crop, medium wise. So he had worked with Allison before and believed that she had genuine talent. Or a gift or whatever. So she had been recruited for this particular study. And I love this study because it's a little off my topic in that it's not designed to prove anything necessarily, but it was called the Asking Questions Study. And it was a bunch of four mediums asking two dead people, discarnates as they say, asking them the things we all want to know, such as, what's the weather like there? Do you eat? Do you have sex? What are you wearing? What's it like? Is it boring? I mean, there were 30 questions about the afterlife that were posed by these mediums. Anyway, she was one of those mediums.
And discarnate being the new politically correct term, sort of PC? Sort
yeah,
of
like developmentally disabled. Yes,
sort of
they all begin with D.
Okay, good. So discarnate. The discarnate.
Yes, the discarnate. Because as Gary said, Gary calls it the death hypothesis. As in, nobody's proved that we die.
Well, that's actually sort of endorsed that. That's an interesting way of looking at it.
Yeah.
Now, were the discarnates warm to the inquiries? Did they seem to want to go down this road?
The discarnates were fine, but the mediums, some of them were not. You get a lot of responses like, I'm not getting anything for this. No, nothing. You know, I don't think they enjoyed this particular task. It was so specific, and it's very, you know, they're used to just reporting what comes in over
right.
the wire service.
So they're there asking, and they're asking questions about sex in the afterlife or pleasure and all the
other. Well, yeah, just,
what
you know, what do you do all day, what, yeah,
right.
et cetera.
And what do they hear?
So, I'll tell you some highlights. Okay, this was one response. It's Florida without the humidity. and here's a good one. What do you do? Well, I'm seeing her eating. I like this. Do you eat all day? Also, fat people are thin in the afterlife.
That in the afterlife?
Yep. Okay. Someone asked about music, and unfortunately, the Carpenters was what came through.
Get out.
I'm serious. I'm sorry.
That's yes, what they said?
That's what one of the answers was. There wasn't a lot of agreement from you know, medium to medium.
Now, to be very clear, when they were saying all that you were hearing was music from the Carpenters, were they in heaven or hell? Because that would be important to know, isn't it?
This is my personal hell.
Yeah. I mean, could that be, were they embracing that idea of the Carpenters all the time, or?
And my very favorite was, I wish I could look this up for you. Can I quickly, it'll only take me a second because I want to get the wording right.
This is fine. So
here it is. I found it.
Okay. This is a report from the medium that they heard back from one of the discarnates.
Yes. From one of the question, are there angels? Answer. Yeah, but they've got their own clique going. They've got their own little deal going on.
So it's just like high school.
It's just like, it's just like high school.
All yeah. right. So then this was the medium from medium that was involved with this.
Yeah.
And were you able to get like a personal reading or do you get an idea of what is going on around you?
I'll tell you what. Okay. This is when she was doing her thing there and I was sitting on the sidelines and there was a man who was filming for something. I forget what. And she's going through, she was actually doing a different study at this moment. And she stopped the proceedings and she said, I just have to say I'm getting information from her mother and his father, meaning my mother, who is dead. And it's this guy's father was dead.
And had you told her your mother was dead?
No.
Did that freak you out a little bit?
No, it didn't at the time because, you know, I'm 46 and a lot of people's mothers are dead at that point.
But...
So, you know, that wasn't a little bit, but not compared to what came later.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
Don't you love how I build this suspense?
No, you're doing great. I love it.
So, all right. So after the experiment, I said, could you tell me, you know, some things, did anything else come through? I'm just curious, you know, about, because my mother is dead. And so she did a little reading. She kind of does this odd thing where she sits, you know, she's just sitting in a chair. She's not, you know, she doesn't look hokey or anything. She's just very nicely dressed. But she has a pad of paper and she scribbles. She's constantly scribbling as she, like, gets these transmissions or whatever you call them. So she said, okay, and she you know, she told me some things. A lot of them were vague, things that could apply to a lot of people, such as a cat in a window, a woman with gray hair, a ring on the finger, you know, stuff that, you know, I was like, okay, usual stuff. So then, you know, that was that. And I'm talking to Gary Schwartz, and we're bickering about something, I don't know. And then Allison said to me, she's across the room now. She said, an hourglass that you turn over, does your brother have one? And my brother collects hourglasses.
Okay.
Okay.
That gets your attention.
That gets your attention. That was not something, even if she had my social security number, even if she had hired a PI to do an investigation on me before I came, she would not know that Rip collects hourglasses. So that was an odd coincidence, or she was picking something up.
Well, it can't. I mean, the odds of that being a coincidence, I think, are pretty high. I mean, that's an extraordinarily obscure thing.
If she said
timepieces, then you might say, oh, he's got a watch. I mean, that wouldn't be that big a deal.
Right.
But to say hourglass. And to make it a precious thing for him really reaches beyond.
Yes.
I would think, you know, statistical probabilities on this. But again, what can you, as a science investigator, how does science apply to that moment?
This is the difficulty with trying to investigate something like mediumship, because from what little I know about these people, it seems that, you know, sometimes it's almost like tuning a radio. You get to that point and something comes through. You can't quite, you know, it's not there all the time, but so, you know, if the atmospheric conditions are right, and boop, something comes through. But you can't sit down in a lab and just do it on command, it seems. Because most of the stuff she said didn't fit my mother at all. So clearly, you know, the tuner wasn't in the right place at that moment, and then something changed, and it was. I mean, that is the only way I can imagine it. And how are you supposed to study that?
Well, but it's helpful when you have something like ectoplasm and saving for the moment the discussion of where they would find the ectoplasm. Let's go to, is it Cambridge where you went to the library?
Yes, I went to, I don't, I, tracked down what I think is the last remaining sample of ectoplasm. Should I explain to people what ectoplasm was, this is during the heyday of spiritualism in the late 1800s and the early 1900s. Seances were a huge thing. Mediums were, you know, there were sittings and tables were rocking and trumpets were flying across the air and music was playing. Just seances were almost like a form of entertainment. You know, people believed, they really did believe, partly because there were scientists, some of them, you know, PhDs and Nobel laureates, who were saying, I cannot for the life of me figure this out. This must be real. If I, with my PhD, can't figure it out, it's got to be real. So people, you know, the Sorbonne University was doing studies. Scientific American was taking this seriously. And ectoplasm was thought to be a physical manifestation of spirit energy.
A residue.
Yes, and it was exuded from the medium, and it would essentially take, there were two species, one the cheesecloth variety and the other the animal organ variety. This is what they turned out to be. But in the dark, with a little phosphorescent paint, they appeared to be very just spooky and weird, and I guess they can, I mean, you look at the photographs and you kind of are left scratching your head because it's so clearly cheesecloth. But at the time, ectoplasm was, it was accepted. I mean, it's a kind of an incredible period of time. The 1920s, if you look in the New York Times index, 1921, there'll be 10 entries under ectoplasm. Mediums, all the, it was huge. I mean, it was partly, you know, after World War One, so many people had lost sons that there was a great, you know, desire to believe that they were okay and that you could possibly even communicate with them. So that probably contributed to it. But it was just a fascinating time. I just loved researching this.
And yet this ectoplasmic archive, I mean, there was a place where they were holding last.
Yes. Came, of all places, Cambridge University in the and I had to get permission from the keeper of manuscripts and archives. I actually had to apply to get in for a day to this archive. And I'm in this room with, you know, scholars who are, you know, sacrificing their eyesight to medieval land transfers.
Right.
I mean, it's a very, very scholarly and, you know, kind of hushed room. And I've, you know, made an appointment to, the reason that ectoplasm is in Cambridge is because the Society for Psychical Research Archives was absorbed by Cambridge University. It was, I guess they bequeathed it to Cambridge.
Right.
At one point. So they have all kinds of, you know, letters and, you know, all kinds of artifacts. But there's this big, it looks like a cake box. You know, it's tied up with string. And, you know, this manuscript room page brought it to my table. And, you know, people sort of look over at me. And I'm there with this box, and you know, I wanted to, you know, wait till people had sort of gone to lunch before I opened it, because on the card, what it says, this was an ectoplasm of a woman named Helen Duncan, and it says on the card, it is believed that it was secreted vaginally. In other words, backtrack a minute. One of the things that the researchers would do was tie the hands. You know, they would search the mediums to make sure they weren't bringing anything in, you know, because they were trying to figure out, oh, that ectoplasm, they've got to be, it's up their sleeve or something.
Right.
And it wasn't up their sleeve. It was, so they couldn't figure it out, but at one point they figured out that they were storing it in a woman's most convenient warehouse, that was, I think, how they put it.
Well, let's leave the story there for the moment. Let's pick it up with the researchers making the mediums wear special shorts and explain the ectoplasm collection process and what else we have been able to determine as science tackles the afterlife. Spook. More with Mary Roach and your phone calls next on Coast to Coast.